This episode of Guitar Radio Show is brought to you in part by
the Southern Heritage Humbuckers from Nico's USA Pickups. Experience tone. Nico's USA Pickups.com.
Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should. Here's your host, Mark Davin.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 122 of Guitar Radio Show. This is our post Dallas International Guitar Festival show. Plus, we've got two cool interviews today. A real quick one with the great Rob Balducci from the Dallas International Guitar Festival. And then with a guitar player that everybody should know about. I'm telling you, folks. Mr. Russ Hewitt is with us today for an in-depth interview. And he's going to talk about his new release, which is coming very soon. And he's got a special guest on there that, well, I'll let you tell him about it. Tell you about it. I'm still recovering, folks. Great weekend. Want to say hi and thanks to everybody that I ran into at the Dallas International Guitar Festival. We had a blast. Unfortunately, our good buddy Steve Cohn could not join us. He had some other pressing engagements. He was very missed. It's not DIGF without him, without a doubt. Want to say thanks to Scott Gaylor. So great to see him and hang out for a little while and shoot the bull. Of course, Johnny Hyland. I got to meet Bob Keeley, which was great, and we're hoping to have him on the show real soon from Keeley Pedals. Of course, Rob Balducci. Red Volkert, always a blast to see him play and chat with him. Gary Hoey, the best. Just love him. And Eric Gales tore the place up as well. And it was nice to get in chat with Mr. Jimmy Wallace, who we hope to have on here soon for an in-depth interview as well. Folks, in regards to the Dallas International Guitar Festival, go to guitarradioshow.com for our Jagundo. Yeah, that's a technical term. Our Jagundo video blog on some of the performances and ongoings. We were able to catch some impromptu guitar performances that were happening right there in the festival hall, in the exposition hall, and that was really kind of cool. I got to meet up with Mr. Brad Whitford from Aerosmith, and we chatted a little bit, and he gave us a quick guitar lesson on how to play Toys in the Attic properly, the right way. So it was kind of interesting to see that. I always thought that it was a single note pattern in the verse, but I guess not. You'll get to see the video. Go to guitarradioshow.com and you'll be able to see that there. I want to remind you, guitarradioshow.com, guitarradioshow@gmail.com for all your burning needs. Want to let you know that coming up, we have another blog with Adam P. Hunt. 500 words with Adam P. Hunt. And this is one's going to be, it's very, very apropos after the Dallas Guitar Fest. European guitar builders you should know, but you probably don't. So check that out. That's coming out tomorrow, Thursday, the day after this episode, on guitarradioshow.com. And next Thursday, we have the third installment of Tips, Tricks, and Licks with Mr. Scott Gaylor, who just tears it up. And this one, he's asking you to stop, think, and shut off everything else. Shut off TV, shut off your social media, shut off your phone, and go practice. 15 minutes a day. Sounds like nothing, right? It's hard to do that. It's hard to allocate time like that. Well, he talks about that. So it's a real good one. I just finished watching it, and it's really, really good. So that's coming up next Thursday. So we got a lot of interesting stuff coming your way. What else did I want to remind you of? Oh, yeah. Want to say hi and thanks to the folks over at Nico's USA Pickups. They are offering 10% off discount for all purchases between now and May 31st to all Guitar Radio Show listeners. So when you make your purchase at checkout, put the promo code in GRS and receive 10% off your purchase. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. Our good buddy Steve Cohn just did a really great video for one of their new humbuckers. And we'll put that up on guitarradioshow.com as well, so you can check that out. What else did I want to remind you? Let's see. Oh, yeah, we're giving away a set of Tele pickups from Nico's USA Pickups.com. You want to win? Go to guitarradioshow.com, go to the Contact GRS tab, put in your information, and in the comment box, write, pickups, please. Pickups, please. Thank you. And hit submit, and you're automatically entered to win. Cool? All right, great. Don't forget about the video blog. I think you're really going to dig it. Just a real quick dip back into this past weekend. Here's a quick interview that I did with Mr. Rob Balducci. It's just about 5 minutes long. Check it out. And he lets us know what's going on both there and what's going on in his travels. You ready? After that, we'll get into the Russ Hewitt interview. Here we go. Guitar Radio Show. GuitarRadioShow.com.
Hey, everybody. Mark David from Guitar Radio Show. GuitarRadioShow.com. I'm here with the amazing Rob Balducci.
Thank you. Thanks.
And he's a paisan.
How you doing?
How are you?
Good. Doing good.
You enjoying the show?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're having fun. We played last night with the band.
Yeah.
And that went really well.
Yeah, it went really well.
And I had the pleasure of demoing with Robert Keeley and Keeley Electronics.
Uh-huh.
All weekend, so playing those wonderful pedals, and you know, he's posting a bunch of videos. So check Facebook, there's a bunch of videos up there.
Absolutely,
so we're having some fun.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, the set last night was incredible.
Oh, thank you.
It really was. I mean, you kind of manipulated the audience and their emotions. It was really kind of cool.
Thanks.
Really kind of cool.
Yeah, it was. You know, it's a weird thing because that this kind of happened last minute.
Yeah.
I knew I was demoing, but we didn't know the band was playing, so like I didn't have any of my gear, so I kind of, you know, as guitar players, I plugged into the amp and I was like, you know, at least I had Keeley's pedals in front, and you know I kind of like shoved my earplugs in, tried not to hear anything, just play.
You know, you'd never know it though. I mean, really, it sounded like you.
Oh, cool. That's
it sounded
good.
Like you. It sounded normal. It sounded like it should. It didn't sound like you were struggling with the gear or anything like that.
Oh, great. So. That's good.
Yeah.
But thanks.
Yeah,
that's a good sign. I got to see with the videos.
Yeah, I was talking to a couple people about that, you know, saying that this has got to be a tough gig. You know, the fly gigs are tough gigs because you come in and you're like, okay, I don't know what I'm getting.
Right.
You know, what am I going to be plugging into? And finding your footing underneath, that's got to be difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. So what's going on back east? What do you guys got?
Well,
going
we just
on?
We, you know, we're pulling shows. You know, again, you know, we're independent, so independent record, you know, independent artists. So
right.
You know, we're getting shows together. You know,
right.
I mean, like this was a cool thing to do. When we go back, we got something in New Jersey at Mexicali Live, so you guys gotta come out May 21st, Saturday night with Chris Duarte.
Oh,
so Texas,
oh my God.
Coming to here.
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
You two together, is there gonna be a jam? Tell me there's a jam.
There probably will be. So that's gonna be a good show. So
God.
Mexicali Live, May 21st, and then we got some shows upstate. I'm playing in June. We got in Binghamton, and then June 25th, Saturday night, the Hard Rock Niagara Falls.
Oh,
that's
gonna
be really cool.
Yeah, that's a good room. That's actually a good sounding room.
Yeah.
It really is. That's great.
And that's
wow.
a free show, too. It's long. It's an evening with, so you guys got to come. It's like I'm playing like over an hour and a half of stuff.
Wow.
So it should be fun.
Wow. Can people like do requests?
Sure.
So they could email you. They could send you.
Yeah, they could email if you want to put it on this chat.
Yeah,
you could tag me.
Yeah, I can send.
If you guys have requests that you want to hear,
so folks, do that. If you want, if there's a tune you want to hear from that Niagara Falls show, put it on here, and we'll get it to
you. I'll try. If I can remember the tune, I'll try and get it on.
Free Bird! So you and Duarte, man, that is like a guitar orgasm.
Oh, thanks. No,
yeah,
it's
going to
be a fun show. And that's a great room. I don't know if you've ever been there. It's a really nice room.
Yeah.
Really nice club.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Well, did you get a chance to go around and look around at all?
Not too much. A little bit.
Yeah.
Of course, there's guitars that you want to buy, and, you know, I got to buy. I'd like to buy, like, every one of Keeley's pedals and every pedal that's in here, the old ones, the Distortion Plus, and if I go home with any pedals, my wife will throw me out.
Well, yeah, I've seen that big shelf you got in the back of the room with all the pedals.
I know.
And how many TS-9s do you have?
I don't know, like at least 10.
And they're all different.
They're all different.
You got to say that.
No, they are.
They are.
No, it's true.
They're all
different. They all sound
they
different.
They are. It's true. Some are bright. Some are, yeah, that's true. Very true. It's great to see you, man.
Me too.
Yeah, and it was so much fun to do that interview with you.
Oh, no, it was great.
Yeah.
Listen, we got to stay in touch, maybe, as I'm working on some new material.
Oh.
Maybe even, we could do, some cool, if I have a demo of a new tune, maybe we could do it on the show. Whet people's appetite just to keep the thing
going. Absolutely. They would love that.
We'll stay in touch.
I would love that. They would love that. Absolutely.
Cool.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna check in on some more stuff. You're going to be doing, what else?
I'm going to be at the Keeley booth.
So he's going to be at the Keeley booth. So folks, those of you who are here or coming down, come down, go check out the Keeley booth. First off, the pedals are amazing, and it's what's really been cool about you at the Keeley booth is you're standing behind all the pedals, right?
Yeah.
And people are coming up, and they got the pedals laid out, and people are just kind of like turning knobs while you're playing. It's the craziest thing. It's like, okay, Rob's playing, but everybody else is controlling the sound.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
I had Jason was my pedal, my good friend Jason, who has been helping me out here, taking me around, sort of like my babysitter, because I don't drive. He's been driving me, he's been controlling the board. So, I need the distortion in that one, and I'm giving the nod. He would hit it on. I need the neutrino in that one, and you hit it on.
Well, it's all backwards. Otherwise, it was leaning over like that. That's great. That's fantastic. Rob, I can't thank you enough.
Yes, thank you so much. Thanks so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, folks.
Well, there's our interview with Rob Balducci from the Dallas International Guitar Festival. It was great to meet up with him and say hi and talk about gear and stuff. And he's got that gig coming up. If you are interested in you're going to be in the Niagara Falls area and you're going to go to that show at the Hard Rock, let us know what tunes you want to hear. And we'll pass that on to Rob. And like he said, hopefully I can remember them. Okay, cool. Let's get into it. Here's our interview with Mr. Russ Hewitt. I think you're going to be very impressed. Check out some of these tunes. Guitar Radio Show, guitarradioshow.com. Folks, sometimes people ask me, Mark, do you love what you do? And I say yes, especially when I get to talk to people like our next guest. We have Mr. Russ Hewitt. How are you, Russ?
I am good. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for taking the time. I know you're pretty busy and you've been working hard, and it's great to sit down with you and have a chat about guitar and the amazing music that you make. So I'm excited to have you.
My pleasure. Yeah, my pleasure. And I can talk shop and guitar for hours.
No.
So, I mean, this is what I would choose to do over watching TV.
Well, let's do it then. Folks, you can go to RussHewittMusic.com to learn more. And it's actually a pretty cool website. There's a lot of vids, and there's some great sound samples that you can hear. And if you it's interesting. If you want to feel good, it's funny because I was when I was taking notes, preparing for this, I was listening to your records, And there's a, and I don't mean this in I mean this in the esoteric sense. There's a spirituality to your music.
Well, thank you. You know, as an artist, that's probably the ultimate goal is to create some kind of reaction within the listener.
Mm-hmm.
I've been asked a ton of times, you know, what's your inspiration? What do you draw upon when you write music? And of course, I'm influenced by people and places and things and events and stuff that I do. But because I do instrumental music, my approach is a little different. So what I want to do is create a music that becomes a platform for the listeners so they can project what they want onto the music. I would have people come up and say, well, this song reminds me of this, or, mm-hmm. you know, I get the feeling of this, and that may be 180 from my intent when I wrote it, mm-hmm. but the end result is exactly that. I want to write something that, you know, takes the listener to a place they've been, maybe take a listener to a place they want to go, maybe remind them of something that has happened, or, you know, drive fast in the car. I mean, mm-hmm. whatever kind of emotion, that's the ultimate goal. You know, the worst thing as an artist, I feel, is creating something and it has no reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, okay, well, that's good. What's next? You know, to me, then you failed as a songwriter if you don't create any kind of feeling.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I think that's really what it's all about, too. You know, it's funny because I was listening to your latest record, and help me pronouncing it. It is Almavia?
Vea. Almavia, yes.
Okay. And I'm listening to it, and it doesn't sound anything like this particular artist, but it made me feel that good feeling when I heard it. It just took me back to a time of when I would hear the early Pat Metheny Group records. But it doesn't sound anything like Pat Metheny Group records.
Well, I mean, to even be mentioned with Pat Metheny, you know, he has been at the forefront and innovator of of jazz and his style of music. You know, he's got such a distinct sound and feel that when I hear it, I just go, okay, well, that's Pat.
Yeah, you know what? You hear one note, and you know it's Pat. And I get that with you too. There's a signature.
Wow.
There's a signature sound that you have. It's that flesh on the strings and on the wood, and it's you.
Yes. No. I mean, again, the ultimate goal as a guitarist, on a selfish sense, is to have unique style and a unique tone. And mm-hmm. there's a handful of guitarists. You know, Eric Johnson. The moment you hear Eric Johnson,
oh, yeah.
you go, okay, that's Eric.
Yes.
The moment you hear, I mean, even Yngwie, you go, okay, that's Yngwie. Or mm-hmm. Santana. I mean, he's got such a distinct tone and style. I have to give a lot of credit to my producer, Bob Parr. He's worked with me for all of my instrumental stuff, and he's my secret sauce. He's my George Martin, if you will, of what I do, because we spend time and we work on the sounds, and I'm very aware of the other guitarists that are in my genre that kind of do what I do, and I purposely stray away from that. I'll do different tones, I'll add in different sounds and different beats to kind of distinguish myself from the group. Now, again, whether or not it's good or it's bad, if you like it, if you don't like it, I'm purposely seeking it out to be a little different.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, within my sound, even from the guitar to the picks I use, to the cables I use, to Bob Parr's production, it's all kind of with an intent and a purpose to make it sound a little different.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the goal.
Yeah, I get that for sure. You know, and there's very few people that are playing what you're playing now. There are less and less guitar players doing this type of stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's a blessing and a curse. You know, it's great that there's less, but then, you know, is it less because there's a lesser demand for it? You know, there's always that kind of that fine line.
Mm-hmm.
One of the more popular groups right now is that Rodrigo El Gabriela.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all over the map and they're all over the place, and they've really kind of given their style a boost, albeit they run it as a duo. It's still within that same vein. And mm-hmm. and lo and behold, on their very first album, before they got signed, they actually did their style of music with the full band. And I guess at some point they decided just to do it as a duo, and that's when they took off
mm-hmm.
and got crazy popular. But, you know, there are staples that one of my largest influences is Strums and Farrar. And they're still putting out incredible stuff for, you know, 30 years. They've just been doing incredible things.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, gosh, since 80, so what does that make it? Yeah, 40 years now.
Yeah.
That's a long time. But it's such a, you know, they've got such a standard of songwriting and playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got on my new CD, I actually have a song that features Ardeshir Farrar from the group Strums and Farrar. So it's been an honor to hang with them and to meet with them and to play with them, and to have one of my large influences now playing a song on my new record. That's very exciting for me.
That's really cool. And I want to talk about the new record, the latest record. And I have some certain tracks that really stood out for me that I want to ask you about. But before I do that, what made you pick up the guitar in the first place? What made you do it? Who was it?
It was my older brother, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He's 4 years older than I was. And so he started playing at 14. So at age 11, I guess maybe he was 15 when he started. But at age 11, I got a guitar because he got a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
He was obviously much better, and he was doing bands in high school and so forth. And I just kind of had it around. The group of friends that I was hanging out with also played guitars, so just kind of fit in with them and fit in with my brother. I got a guitar and learned just a handful of stuff and didn't really take to it until my brother quit the guitar and sold me his equipment. And he had this phenomenal custom Gibson Explorer. And getting that new guitar, I was like, wow. I had this cheap Hondo guitar. And, you know, without the pressure, and my brother was very supportive, but without, you know, my brother's presence of playing, and I was kind of free to learn on my own pace and my own time, and with the new guitar, I took to it, and, you know, I hadn't stopped since.
Hmm. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up, I was in Florida, Titusville, Florida, and that's famous for being right across the Indian River of Cape Canaveral. So Saturday mornings, our house would shake, and I'd come running out in the front yard, and I would look over, and I would see the rockets up in the air.
Wow.
So then at the age of 9, we moved to Weatherford, Texas, and that's a small town, probably 20 minutes west of Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there until I went to school at University of North Texas, and then after I graduated, I moved to Dallas.
So how did this music, you know, I mean, it's rumba, it's flamenco, it's sambas, it's elements of gypsy jazz. I hear, and you know, and I'm going to say this when we talk about the tracks. There's some tracks that makes me feel like I'm in old Mexico, and there are other tracks that make me feel like I'm in Miami, and there are certain tracks that make me feel like I'm in Portugal. So, how did that get into you? How did that happen?
Well, that's an interesting question. I graduated North Texas in a classical performance degree in guitar,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, okay, I've got this degree. You know, here comes my life of being a classical guitarist. And it's a rough world out there for the classical guitarist.
Yeah.
It's to make a living, to be a classical guitarist, it's tough. You know, it's limited opportunities. You can get weddings on occasion, you get museum stuff. But in that world, it's really kind of based on competitions. And if you win a bunch of competitions, and then you can have this nice resume, and then you can, it's based on a resume and so forth. But for a live gigging guitarist, it's inconsistent.
Well, yeah, there's only a few Julian Breams, you know.
Right.
I mean, I graduated from school as a classical guitarist as well. So, and I knew there was no way. I was like, I'm not doing this.
Now, and as a side note, a little asterisk. I mean, there's so many times you can record Leyenda or Recuerdos, and are you going to do it better than, you know, Breen? Are you going to do it better than Christopher Parkening or John Williams?
I mean, right.
The repertoire of the classical guitarist is very kind of limited too.
So
I struggled with that, and someone gave me, when I was going to school at North Texas, Otmar Liebert's first CD, and I always enjoyed it. It's very listener-friendly stuff. I would have it on the background. You know, it wasn't technically difficult, but it was catchy tunes. It was something that, again, my parents would like, a girlfriend would like, something that I could just have going on. And so I kind of took to it, and then I started discovering other artists in that style. There was Jesse Cook, and then, of course, Strums and Farrar. And when I heard Strums and Farrar's live album, that kind of opened the world to me. I was like, wow, you can have players that are technically proficient, write complex songs, yet accessible to the listener. So what would happen during the 90s, as I was doing my rock band stuff and I was doing my classical gigs when I could, in restaurants, I would be playing this Nuevo Flamenco style, and kind of learn all the rumba rhythms. Not all, I learned a lot of the rumba rhythms, and learn some of the covers within that genre. They're the Gypsy Kings, again, some of the Otmar stuff, some of the Strums and Farrar stuff. And during this whole time, I was still pushing my rock band, and finally, when my last rock band broke up, the producer who did that had heard me do this Nuevo Flamenco style with my full band, and he was like, let's go ahead and move forward, and I want to record you doing this style. So and the local band that I had was incredible. I had a Brazilian drummer, self-taught, that was phenomenal. I had a flamenco prodigy guitarist out of Guatemala, and my bass player, who was also the producer, was a session guy in L.A., had a studio in California, had a studio in Nashville, had a studio up in Connecticut, had all of this knowledge and so forth. And so I started writing these songs, and, consider that Nuevo Flamenco style, because it's not true anything. It's not true Brazilian stuff, and it's not true Cuban stuff, and it's I'll kind of borrow and steal from all the different Latin fields. Well,
it's a hybrid,
A hybrid, exactly. And all under the gel of essentially pop songs. You know, I write my songs like a pop song, where there's an intro, a verse, a chorus, sometimes a bridge, a solo, tag another verse, chorus, and maybe chorus out. So I'll structure it more like a pop song than like a jazz standard, where you've got the head, then you've got 5 minutes of solos, and then you've got the head again, and you're out. So I, coming up from, from a pop sense, from a rock sense of having a song structure, that's what I wanted to apply to this in the way of the flamenco style. So, within also studying the other guitarists, I noticed a lot of them don't have a gypsy jazz influence. So I focused in a lot. I think half my licks I do are variations of gypsy jazz licks.
Mm-hmm.
I come from a rock heavy metal background, and I love the shred guitar stuff from the 80s. So, another large portion of my playing is shred stuff from back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, didn't I see a picture of you at NAMM with, was it, who are you with? Hetfield?
I was with a ton of people. Well, one was actually Wolf Hoffman.
With who?
Wolf Hoffman.
Oh, Wolf, yeah, okay, yeah, for sure, yeah.
And Wolf actually played a solo on my Rock Band album before we broke up, so it was great to run into him and talk to him. But I'm a rock guy, so everyone from Nuno Bettencourt to even Blue Saraceno to Zach Wilde to... that's kind of my comfort zone. That's what I know the best.
Right.
So, running into these guys, I ran into Greg Harrigan, and I did an interview with him for an online guitar magazine a couple of years ago. So it was always great to kind of see and catch up with him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, all these rocker guys is who I know the best.
That's wild. And here you are playing this. It's so different than that. And it's interesting because, we always talk about this on this show, is that this show is the buffet table of music. We don't just fill up on the pasta or the Swedish meatballs. It's a lot of different things that we're into here. And, much in the same way you pick up a really good guitar magazine, I won't name any names, but you pick up a really good guitar magazine, and it's got a little bit of everything in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just relegated to one style, and so it's refreshing to hear you say that. Here you are. This is what you do, and you love it, but you also have this other part of you. And it's funny too because I know Rodrigo and Gabriel. They met in a metal band.
Yeah, well, it's funny. Everyone that kind of does this style comes from probably 90% of everybody who plays the style that I play come from a rock background.
Yeah.
Kind of rock, heavy metal. Yeah, they were in a heavy, heavy metal band.
Yeah.
In Mexico.
Like thrash.
Yeah. So it's funny that the guitarists that I've met along the way that do what I do, everyone that I've met is a rocker.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of found this way to this. And it's great in the 90s with my rock band, solos were not in vogue at the time. They all kind of disappeared. So the only place that I got to shred and to keep up my chops and, play changes and all that was doing my Nueva Flamenco style in restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
So, here I am doing the rock stuff, I'm doing no solos, and then you come to a restaurant and I'm just shredding away and it fits the style perfect.
Yeah.
So it was very self-serving when the solos went out of style, and of course now that's kind of come back around, then it's nevertheless, I don't have to rework anything up again because I've been doing it the whole time.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, let me delve into this record a little bit with you. There's a track on the album that stood out for me. It's called Samba Samba.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a question that I wanted to ask you, too, because before we went live, we were talking about titles, and you had mentioned them. Oh, God, titles. I think you called it the bane of your existence or something like that.
Yeah, for titles, it's so funny. I can tell when an artist has given up and just almost like just opened up a dictionary and just said, okay, that's the title of my song. Because it's like, it has nothing to do with anything.
Right.
I've got, for Samba Samba, I've never told this before.
Oh, I love this.
So you're going to have an exclusive.
I love exclusives.
I thought of the title Samba Samba from Little Caesar's Pizza.
Get the hell out of here.
Because you'd go, pizza, pizza. Pizza, pizza. And I thought, oh, Samba Samba.
You didn't really. Did you really?
Yeah, that's why on the CD there's two exclamation points, because the guy, you know, on the commercial is like, pizza, pizza. So I was like, oh, Samba Samba. So
that's pretty good, Russ. That's pretty darn good.
That's a funny song. That song actually wasn't on the original recording for that record.
Oh.
What had happened is I would write these songs, and then, you know, busy doing other stuff, doing business stuff, playing and gigging. And so I'd kind of not really write songs in the meantime. Mm-hmm. So I thought, as soon as I finished recording my second CD, I was like, okay, I'm not going to wait around to write songs again. So I actually wrote Samba Samba as the first song for my next CD.
Mm-hmm.
And it just came together so nicely and quickly, and we didn't have a samba style on that album. We were like, well, we got to include this. And so we went back in and brought the players back in, and we recorded this song specifically just to add to that album.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, from a guitar geek technical side of it, it's the first time I wrote a song using modal interchange. And I don't know if you're familiar with modal interchange,
mm-hmm.
but it's where you can take a major key, like E major, and mix the chords with its minor key, not relative minor, but E major and E minor together.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got, you know, you're going from four sharps to one sharp, and you can go from chord to chord that way. So even the first two chords of that song is E major 6-9 to C major 7-sharp-11.
Mm-hmm.
So technically they shouldn't go together, but using the style of this modal interchange,
right,
it works. So I use that as the basis, and then the song's been great for me. It made the top 40 on the smooth jazz charts. It gets played a lot, like when I get my Sound Exchange, and I see it, that's one of the top songs played.
Oh, interesting.
And ironically enough, I have a buddy who is a big band director, and I'm actually doing a concert at the end of this month, doing some big band stuff, and we're taking some of my tunes and pinning them into big band style.
Oh, wow.
And we're going to do two songs from each album, and my mom's a ballroom dancer, so I kind of got the idea, like, well, I want to maybe have her, you know, dance to some of my stuff in her dance studios, and they always kind of do the big band style.
Wow.
And there's different dances and styles that they'll dance to, and I thought, well, if I take my samba song and I put it in big band style, then she could actually dance to it. So we're going to do it. We're re-imaging two songs from each album and doing them in big band style.
And that's one of them.
Yeah.
That's cool. And it's such a feel-good song. For some reason, I was thinking, and I mean this in the best possible way, for some reason I was thinking of, do you remember Spyro Gyra?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
I was like, wow, it feels good. It feels like that, what was that? they had a track called Moonlight Dance, I think, maybe. I can't remember. It was a title track off of an album. But it feels so good. It just makes you feel good, which I really
like. Thank you. That's one of my favorite ones. And what we did for this new CD yet to be titled, I wrote another samba, and it's called Samba Sao Paulo. And it's cool. It's one of my favorite. Again, it's funny, and there's also a bossa nova on the new album. Mm-hmm. And I wrote the bossa. I wanted it to be like Jobim's lost song. Like, if you hear it, you go, well, that had to be a Jobim song.
Mm-hmm.
But chords in that style, in the samba and the bossa style, they're very intimidating to me. Because this is not something you just kind of rattle off. It's something that I have to study and I have to spend a lot of time on.
Yeah.
So those two songs, they're intimidating to write because I just don't want to make it wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah.
I don't throw in something that just doesn't work. So I, of all the tunes of my originals, the sambas and this bossa nova, I spent the most time on just to make sure that they're right.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing about it is I'm looking at my notes and I'm looking at all the things that I wrote about each song as I was listening, and they all have a common theme to it. It's like you hear this music and it's like, everything's going to be all right.
Well, that's, you know, the goal ultimately as an artist, I think sometimes you forget that there's a listening audience. There's people listening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, as a guitar player, it's easy to get very gratuitous with stuff. Have a song that's got 16 parts,
mm-hmm.
and goes crazy. And on a side note, I love those kind of songs. I love Dream Theater. I love the progressive, long type of songs. But for me personally, yeah, I try to be, which is the worst thing possible, is I try to be all things to all people.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is the audience who doesn't know me or my music, can they sit down and enjoy it? Would your parents enjoy this?
Mm-hmm.
Would somebody that's, you know, coming off the blue and taking a chance and going to see me in concert, right, would they be entertained for more than three songs? Or after three songs, are they going to be bored? After three songs, have they heard everything already? You know, so I want to appeal to those that can just listen to it and go, oh, that's a cool song, or that's nice. You know, have it on repeat plays in the background, sip a margarita in your backyard, mm-hmm. and just have it playing in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next level would be for guitar players. If, as a guitar player, if you're listening to this, am I catching the correct changes? Am I mm-hmm. doing a nice mix of mm-hmm. a technique, phrasing plus tone? And, you know, I'm not trying to beat you over the head with 30-second notes, yet I can do the flurries and I won't bore you with just eighth note stuff either.
Right.
You know, I might do a nice combination. So as a guitar player, that's what I'm thinking about, you know. And as other musicians, if you're a drummer, if you're a bass player, we hear it and go, man, these guys they're tight, or they know, oh, there's that groove, you know, oh, there's a cumbia groove, you know, who knows that, or there's a Argentinian 6/8 groove, well, that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a musician, would what I do appeal to you? You know, so that's kind of my approach to my music, is I want this broad scope of appeal.
Yeah, and I think you've nailed that. I think you're really running the whole gamut there.
Thank you.
I really do. So, Pacific Sunrise.
Yes.
Now, there's a song, that's a driving song. That's a song you want to be in your car, you know.
Well, every time I go to California, I get it, why people move there and they want to stay there. You know, it's gorgeous, it's scenic, it's as advertised. So every time I go back to do NAMM or go back to do shows or a little tour, then I'm like, ah, yeah, I love it out here. So I was thinking with Pacific Sunrise is cruising down the 101, and a very scenic coastal drive where it's, again, it's in a minor key, yet it's upbeat. So yeah, that was the goal. And I've got the phenomenal Michael Lincoln, who's an incredible contemporary smooth jazz artist, playing on it. And he was incredible. I mean, he was actually on tour with Michael Bolton and had booked the studio date before he booked the Michael Bolton tour. And they actually let him off on a tour night. And he flew down to record the session and flew back to catch back up with the tour.
Wow.
So he came in and just nailed it. You know, he was just a phenomenal player.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, another track, Gabriela Mi Corazon.
Yes.
Now, here's where we've left South America, we've left Miami, we've left Spain. Now I'm in Mexico. How'd I get there? How'd that happen?
Well, the rhythm that I use there is a malunga. And what a malunga is a slower tango.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was studying classical, and you may know some of these pieces, there's a famous malunga piece. I think is it just called malunga? But I could play it, but I can't think of the full title. But I've always loved that style. And it's just, again, it's kind of where you pick the accents. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's like a tango, again, but it's just a little slower. And I had that rhythm with a lot of these rhythms on Alma Vieja. What I did is, after I recorded my first CD, Baja El Sol, what I didn't want to do is I didn't want just to do the exact same album. So the intent for the second CD was to expand the Latin horizon. So on that second CD, there is the samba, there is the malunga, which is Gabriela, there is the tango, which is the tango for Anne, there's a cha-cha, modified cha-cha, that's Miss Mimi. The first song, Pelerino, that's actually a Brazilian beat that my Brazilian drummer showed me. And he goes, check out this beat. I'm like, I can write a song to that. So the first album and the second album can be played back to back as one long soundtrack without getting the sense that you're kind of getting the same album again. You're getting one long soundtrack instead of the same album back to back. So with that malunga, I've always loved that style. I've always loved that feel. And Gabriela is actually my wife's middle name. So I wrote this song for her. And and on the solo, I thought, particularly on the solos for the second CD, they're a lot longer than on the first one. So I've always been a big fan of Gary Moore. So the solo, to me, is almost like a hybrid. It's gypsy jazz meets Gary Moore, in my opinion.
Yeah, that song really just really resonated with me. I mean, I love Mexican music, you know, Tejano and flamenco music and all, and it just, that one really grabbed me. I was, wow, this is,
well, thank you.
Yeah, I can't get enough of that stuff. It's great. Yeah, so now there's another record in the works. It's almost done.
It is almost done. For my recording band that have been on all three of my records now, including this new one that's about to come out, I have got a phenomenal backing band. On drums, there's Walfredo Reyes Jr., who's done five Santana albums, three Steve Winwood, Chicago, Ricky Martin, Christina Aguilera. He's just So now he's been on hundreds of recordings. So he's playing drums on percussion. There's a guy named Rafael Padilla, and he was the percussionist in Miami Sound Machine. Mm-hmm. So the song Conga was him on Conga. He did Shakira as well. Right now he's with Chris Isaac.
Oh, wow.
And the rhythm guitarist is that flamenco prodigy, Alfredo Casadas. On bass, who's also the producer, Bob Parr. He's done Cher. He's done Brian Setzer Orchestra when he started doing the big band, Jump Jive stuff. Was the only white bass player to record with Barry White. Plus two special guest artists. One, the artist Cher Farah, who I mentioned before, that's mm-hmm. playing a song called Persian Sky. Mm-hmm. And for the radio single, and I just got the track in last night, called North of Home, the guest artist is Larry Carlton. So that's, you know, I've always been a Larry Carlton fan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mr. 335 himself.
That's so right.
I'm just really taken back that, you know, he was willing to do it and was excited about it. And the kicker is, because I do nylon string guitar, he actually recorded his parts on nylon string. And it's been decades, literally decades, since he's done any nylon string recording. So I kind of, you know, brought him out of retirement to do something like that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And it sounds great. I mean, it sounds like Larry Carlton, you know, uh-huh. talking about someone who's got their own style and their own feel.
Yeah.
And I can hear it and go, oh, there you go. So, you know, in studio, I should be able to get back in studio in a couple of weeks. So that's the last song that we need to mix and then off to mastering and then replication. So hopefully the end of April, you know, no later than somewhere in May, I should have it out on iTunes and CD Baby.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's exciting. I can't wait to hear this track. I really can't wait to hear it. So before I let you go, we need to talk about your gear.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. Now, you're with a whole bunch of great people. A whole bunch of great people love you, and they're behind you. And, I mean, from Golden Guitars, Tone Bone, V-Picks, good old Vinny there, Morley.
Yeah.
Voodoo Lab, Prima Acoustic, BBF pedal boards. So what would be cool is take us through, starting with the guitar, take us through your whole, take us through your chain.
I've got, I start with the Godin guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through probably half a dozen or so nylon string guitars. And the problem that I always ran into was the imbalance of strings. Sometimes it was treble heavy and I couldn't hear any of the bass. Sometimes it was bass heavy, I couldn't hear any of the treble. Sometimes I have to be at a very loud volume to get over the drums and bass. And any guitar with a sound hole just feeds back. And even with a feedback buster in the hole, it didn't work, and I came across the Godin, and you know, their philosophy is once you plug it in, it becomes an electric guitar. So mm-hmm. you can have a $5,000 Koa guitar, and as soon as you plug it in, then you're going to live and die by those pickups. So with the Godin guitar, it's got a mic inside, it's thin body, it's got a mic inside plus a piezo pickup. You can blend between the two if you like. And I use the concert style, so it's a 2-inch neck as opposed to 1 3/4 like an electric guitar. So it's a wider neck like a classical guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cable I use is Analysis Plus cables. And I just love them. For one, you could literally tow your car with them. I mean, they're that thick and they're that sturdy. And it's run and it's owned by a guy named Mark Merkel, who was an engineer. And their big tagline is make us prove it. And what that is you can take a guitar, you can split the single from a single from their cable and any other cable, and you can pit it up on Pro Tools. Mm-hmm. And you can see that their cable has a stronger signal than any other cable. And I was just talking to him, Mark, at this last NAMM show, and one of their endorsers is John Mayer. And he was talking about when he was in the studio with John Mayer, what John likes to do is pit a cabinet in a room 80 feet away. And he goes, I literally had to make an 80-foot cable cord for John. And he said, John, he goes, this is the only cable that doesn't lose any of the sound of the signal on 80 feet, which is crazy.
It is
so
amazing.
He's figured out some with an, and they do a lot of home stereo stuff. In fact, they do a lot of high end. He's got some $20,000 stereo cables that he shows. And, you know, I'd go to NAMM and goes, hey, check this out. And, oh, that's nice. He goes, yeah, that's 20 grand. I'm like, oh, here you go. You can have it back. So incredible cables. And then I use VPix. And what I did with my picks is I went to Guitar Center. I said, give me one of each. And then I ordered a bunch of boutique picks that you'd see in guitar magazines and so forth. And I sat down and I used them. I just played them. And particularly with the nylon string, you're going to live and die by your tone. And if you use the wrong kind of pick on a nylon string, it's going to make you sound thin. It's going to be tinny. Mm-hmm. It's going to be too dark, like the Zushi Jazz picks. Mm-hmm. They end up being too dark. It's a very fine line. And as when I was playing the rock guitar, I used the purple Dunlop picks. And they had the same kind of feel and point as those picks I used in my rock guitar, except they're a little thicker. Mm-hmm. And they have just a nice warm tone. So when I use my hybrid picking with my pick and my fingers, the sounds blend together. Mm-hmm. So that's what sold me on the V-picks. And then going through my cable, then I could went to my radio tone bone. And one of the big problems that I had with dealing with sound guys, dealing with monitors, is they all want to make my guitar sound like an acoustic guitar. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of high end, a lot of brightness, a lot of, and it's like, it's not an acoustic guitar, it's a nylon string. So what the tone bone has allowed me to do is actually EQ my sound with how the monitor sounds. So, you know, a normal cabinets and so forth, you don't have to deal with the speaker horn. Well, when you're dealing with monitors in front of the house, you've got speaker horns in there. So I can actually EQ out the frequencies that I don't like, and then just do an EQ out, line out from my radio. And I'll tell them, just run me flat on your board. I've EQ'd it here, and it works like a charm. So that radio actually allows my nylon string to sound like a nylon string.
Mm-hmm.
And I use a Morley wah pedal. Not a wah pedal, I'm sorry. A Morley volume pedal.
Mm-hmm.
For my monitor, I use the DLS effects. That's a tongue twister there. I used a Roto sound pedal on that, and on the song that you like, Gabriella, that's actually featured prominently in that. They're all attached to my BBF pedal boards. And the thing, and there's a gazillion pedal boards out there right now. The thing I loved about BBF is the ability to customize it. So I've got this old rocker school snake skin cover. But what I had them do is, I've got, with a lot of these pedals, the radio, they're proprietary battery packs. You can't just plug them up to a Voodoo Lab. You've got to have its own little power source. That and the Electro Harmonix is also a proprietary source. So I've had them on my pedal board pit inputs on top, so I can just plug in my pedal there and have an output for my monitor and have an extra output just in case my bass player or somebody else needs to plug in for a power source. So I've completely customized my pedal board to accommodate my type of pedals and the kind of electricity I need. And then I go through my home studio. I've got prominent acoustic stuff. I've got a large room, a game room that's now my studio. So I've got high ceilings and a super long wall that I've got prominent acoustic on. And I just, on my pedal board, what isn't proprietary, everything else goes through my Voodoo Lab. And then I just last week, and I hadn't even announced this yet, I just picked up another endorsement from Mission Engineering. And what they do is they do a ton of stuff. They do like a flat response speaker. So if you've got a Kemper or you've got Slicer now, the big one that everybody uses, John Petrucci.
Oh, the Fractal.
Yes. So with those systems, you want a flat response speaker. That way, any kind of setting you have, the speaker will respond properly.
Mm-hmm.
So they make that, but I've got it because I use on my delay pedal. You know, you click it on and click it off. And now with my songs, you know, maybe on the intro, I want a lot of delay because it's open and airy. For the chorus, I want it maybe completely dry because it's a chordal solo or chordal rhythm. And then maybe for the solo, I want it halfway. So I've got their expression pedal designed specifically for my TC Electronics. That's my endorsement, but that's literally everything that I use.
Well, it's amazing, too, because, you know, folks, you can go to RussHewittMusic.com and see some videos there. And he's right when he says, you know, you hear the guitar and it does sound like a nylon string guitar. It doesn't sound like an acoustic guitar going through a piezo or, you know, you obviously spent a lot of time making this happen.
Too much time. You know, but again, you know, like I said earlier, I'm a guitar nerd, and I can talk shop all night, and I just, you know, I wish I knew more. I wish I had more time to kind of to get into all the new technology and all the new sounds, and I'm always trying to keep up and see what's out there and what the latest is and how I can improve my sound. But, you know, I'm very happy with to the point I've gotten right now with my sound and my gear.
Yeah, well, it's working for you, that's for sure. do you ever get through Austin to play at all?
I am looking to probably do that. This last year, with the recording and the mixing of my third CD, I kind of took it easy a little bit on the gigs just to make sure all my ducks were in a row. I did some soundtrack stuff. Also a movie, some webisodes, some stuff that's going to be in a TV show. So I spent some time doing that and then making sure all my copyrights were in order and so forth. But once this third CD comes out, then I'm going to start doing the big push on getting out there and doing a lot more shows and branching out more in my area. Because I'd either play in Dallas or do California or do Florida. I don't do a lot, but Austin, I know would be receptive to my style.
Oh, absolutely.
You've got, you guys have Del Castillo down there, who I love.
Right.
And I think Tana's got a restaurant down there too, right?
No, unfortunately, he sold it.
Yeah. Oh, no.
He sold it and they closed it. It's a sports bar now or something like that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, a bunch of hipsters hanging out there now.
It's oh, man. Bar.
But, yeah, that was kind of cool when he had that. That was neat. But, you know, if you do, please let me know, and I will shout it out all over the place and let people know.
Absolutely.
And I got to tell you, Russ, it was great having you on the show. I want to thank you so much for taking the time. You're an amazing guitar player and a great songwriter. I really love what you're doing. It just makes me feel good.
Well, thank you. Well, I can't wait to get this new one out, and you'll be one of the first to have it, I promise.
Well, thank you. That's great. I can't wait. Folks, like I said, go to RussHewittMusic.com. You can also find Russ out on, he's on Facebook, YouTube, SoundCloud, Tumblr, right? Instagram? You're on Instagram, too?
Soon.
Okay. You can put a lot of gear. You can put a lot of cool gear pictures up there. People love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you again, sir, for being on the show, and we look forward to everything you're going to do.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Hold on 1 second, but we're going to sign off right here. How cool was that? I mean, wow. So he runs on a deep level. Great guitar player and somebody you should really check out. I highly recommend you check out what he does. He's actually here in Texas quite a bit, and I believe he lives not far from Dallas. And he's one of those guys, man, I want to see live. I mean, the live vids of him playing are just really great. I mean, just kind of sweeps you away. Great stuff. Love it. Hey, folks, we got to get out of here, but I want to remind you, guitarradioshow.com. And don't forget about this video blog that we just did from the Dallas International Guitar Festival. Tons of video on there. This year, we were able to get a whole lot of video and a lot of behind-the-scenes kind of impromptu stuff and real laid-back stuff, too, which is kind of cool, along with all the great performances as well. And great pictures, too. We'll be including a lot of gear pictures on there as well. So go to guitarradioshow.com. Look for the video blog on the Dallas International Guitar Festival recap. And don't forget about tomorrow. We've got Adam's blog. 500 words on European guitar builders you should know. And you probably don't. And next week, tips, tricks, and licks with Scott. Sorry, Scott. Go to scottgaylor.com. And what else did I want to tell you? Oh, yeah, nicosusapickups.com. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being part of the family. And don't forget about the giveaway. And don't forget about 10% off all purchases between now and May 31st. All purchases at nicosusapickups.com. At checkout, just put in the promo code GRS to get your 10% off. All right, we're going to get out of here. I hope you enjoyed today's show. It was a blast bringing it to you. As always, thanks to everyone who listens all over the planet. We greatly appreciate you stopping in and taking some time out of your busy day to spend time with us. We got to get going. In the meantime, take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. Keep on playing, and please buy it. Don't steal it. We'll see you on the next episode of Guitar Radio Show. Peace.
Now everybody say, F you, Ed. I like this crowd already.
GRS Production.
New episodes of Guitar Radio Show air every Wednesday on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podbay, Player FM, Podomatic, and of course on guitarradioshow.com.